And building on what Jennifer so eloquently said in trusting black women, I'm going to introduce a very powerful black woman to the stage here with Jacqueline Patterson. She is the director of the NAACP's Environmental and Climate Justice Program, working on the intersections of the environmental movement and the movement against discrimination in this country, as well as the director, the coordinator and co-founder of Women of Color United. So let's give a very warm welcome to Jacqueline Patterson.
So it's a pleasure to be with you all today and over these days. And I thank you for inviting me. It's really a joy to be with you all. And it's been great to hear my co-panelists as well. It's inspiring. And so see a lot of themes in terms of what I will be talking about. As a woman of color who is a daughter of an immigrant father and also of a mother from the Black Belt of Mississippi, I live a life of intersectionality, but also one of relative privilege to the sacrifices of my parents. I also embrace the fact that none of us are free if one of us is oppressed. Therefore, I exist within the inextricably linked tapestry of multiple oppressions that exclude so many of us collectively from the rights that should be afforded to all of us, to the commons. I am a black male living in Baltimore, a city that has recently buried its 2,200th victim of homicide this year, a city where a body cam recently captured the latest incident of evidence planting by the police. I know that I can walk down the street, I can't walk down the street for fear of being harassed at least and brutalized and even murdered are not far from the likelihood of what would happen to me. I had to flee from one nation to the very nation that is responsible for the conflict that caused me to flee in the first place. Here I am called an alien, an illegal, a terrorist. I am a single mother, a head of household. I used to live in Seattle. I knew I was in trouble when the bike lanes and the cupcake shops started to appear. Then my rent doubled overnight, and now I sleep on the couch at my sister's place while my kids sleep on the floor in an inflatable mattress. I live in fear simply because I don't conform to a gender binary, and I've buried too many of my friends who have suffered the fatal results of hate-filled homophobia. I am a 9-year-old, and I am a member of a family that is so poor that we can't pay our gas heating bill. And then when my mother put a space heater in my room, and later caught fire and burned down our home, I was so stricken with guilt that I tried to take my own life. I'm a member of a Navajo family living in the Four Corners region in out in the Southwest. I don't have electricity, but there are 4 coal-fired power plants surrounding my home that are putting sulfur dioxide and nitrogen oxide into the lungs of myself and my children. But I don't have access to that very electricity which goes to power Phoenix and Las Vegas. I am an Appalachian coal miner in a profession where 76,000 of my comrades have died of black lung disease since 1968. While the people in power, the National Mining Association, have fought actively against the very regulations that would have protected me from coal mine dust. I am a Cameroonian woman who left the only home I've ever known, as well as my family, because our crops had dried up. And in crossing the border, I was sexually assaulted. Now I'm HIV positive. I am a child named Destiny who lives in East Chicago, Indiana. The lead levels in my blood were 30 times the allowable limit. And my family, like 1,100 families, was ordered to move from the only home that I've ever known in my housing project because they did recent testing on the soil in my backyard, and they found that the EPA limits are 400 parts per million, but the soil in my backyard was 91,000 parts per million. And when they came into my house and they tested the dust in my home, the levels were 32,000 parts per million in my very home. My name is Warshawn Shirwe. I am a Somali-born Kenyan poet who wrote, "You have to remember that no one puts their child in a boat unless the water is safer than the land." So I am because we are. I am because you are. These and so many other the people and the communities and the travesties they face illustrate for us, as my sister said, that systemic inequities call for systemic transformation. These crises and the discourse surrounding these crises has opened up a space and dialogue around the comprehensive intersectional shift that we must make. There's a dawning recognition that we can't just tweak an existing system that's so deeply flawed that we have a nationwide pattern of poor communities and communities of color living in sacrifice zones where their very lives are sacrificed for the excesses of society and through profit-driven decision-making. If it was as simple as tweaking our current system, the fix would have been running clean water through the pipes in Flint, Michigan, or Baltimore, or Jackson, Mississippi, or the numerous other places where children are drinking poisoned water or otherwise living in contaminated environments. So how do we overcome these oppressions? How do we build the power we need so that all can enjoy the beloved community? We have to address the underpinning dynamics that lead to these injustices. We have to restore democracy. We must ensure that our votes matter and that our votes count. We need to continue the struggle for voting rights, and in doing so, we have to transform these decision-making places from the courtrooms to the zoning boards, to the hearing rooms of the public service commissions, to the halls of Congress, to the auditoriums of the United Nations. We have to transform them from spaces where the people in power are acting at the behest of corporate interests to where we have in the U.S. where we need to get the money out of politics and get money out of the courts through campaign finance reform and through reversing Citizens United. We can't just stop short at making things better for people in poverty. We have to eliminate poverty. We can't just stop short at addressing hate crimes that are just a symptom of a larger problem. We have to eliminate racism, homophobia, Islamophobia, institutionalized discrimination in our society. We have to have universal health care, but we also have to eliminate the toxic conditions that are making people sick in the first place. And so. So while we live in this kind of interlinked miasma of oppression, we also recognize that we are also linked to the stories and the champions of resistance that give us hope and begin to light the way. These stories of the next system that is rising like a phoenix from these ashes of those who have gone before us, and we're powered by the legacies with which they have gifted us. And so in resistance and revolution, we have Dorothy Felix of Mossville Environmental Action Network in Louisiana and her community, which is one of the sacrifice zones referenced earlier. But they are really keeping up the fight for their community and saying, we're not moving, these toxic facilities need to move. Mm-hmm. We have Casey Camp of the Ponca tribe in Oklahoma. During an event we had, she came out and really was standing in support with us and said we need to come together across our differences and be as one in talking about the need to make this energy transition. One of the NAACP members referred to her as Native American, and then he stopped and he's like, is that okay? Is that how what I'm supposed to call you? And then she said, yeah, that's okay. And then she said, in a more sober moment, just don't say redskin. And then she explained to us the origins of Redskins, and that really was an educational moment for us all. She said, Redskins came from a time that there was a bounty on our skin. When they skinned us alive, the skins were red with our blood. And so for us, it was an important moment in terms of really talking about the links in our struggles and in our histories and the fact that we have so much more that unites us than divides us. We have Deanna Lopez of the Southwest Workers Union, who's working on toxics, labor, and immigration with Latino communities in San Antonio. I met Deanna a few years ago when she was a youth organizer, and I saw her recently, was struck by how powerful she's become, and now she's the executive director of SWU. We have Tao Vu, who is with the Boat People SOS and the Mississippi Coalition for Vietnamese American Fisher Folks, who was instrumental in making sure that the voices of the Vietnamese Americans who were impacted by the BP oil drilling disaster were a part of the conversations that resulted in revenue from the Restore Act. Well, we know of Babs Bagwell of the Ilda Jean Charles Band of the Biloxi Chittimacha Choctaw group in Louisiana, where they're the first ever folks who are being displaced by sea level rise, which has overtaken their land. And so they're the community of 35, which is having to move because of the excessive water that's overtaking their land. We have these inspiring folks like the Climbing Poetry, which is two Sandy impacted youth who are part of the Caribbean Youth Exchange. Born out of their experiences, they launched a spoken word duo, which their art is rooted in disaster activism. And so one of the lines from one of their spoken word performances was, who will be paid to rebuild and who will they build for? Well, these are the kind of words that are coming out of our youth activists. Dustin White, who is part of the Ohio Valley Environmental Council, is the son of a coal miner in West Virginia, who laid his father to rest all too early and joined the front lines of the struggle against mountaintop removal. And he said that, that you know, even though he knows his legacy came from the coal mines, he recognizes that he needs to be a part of the just transition and the transformation we need to make. So these are just, a couple other examples. I'm going to stop, but I can't just tell you about these other couple folks. Yep Sadio of the Philippines shed tears as he demanded action before the United Nations and the heads of state who were gathered to really make compromises over what needed to happen as it relates to the UN climate talks. And but at the same time, his family was being ravaged by Super Typhoon Haiyan. And so he really moved folks to understand that these are real impacts that people were facing now. And their kind of small measures and small commitments aren't going to be enough to save his family. Dionne Higwood is a queer Black woman in New Orleans who started Women with a Vision with an aim of upholding the rights and well-being of commercial sex workers against violence, against discrimination, and against exploitation. Ben Eaton is with the Black Belt Communities Fighting for Health and Safety in Uniontown, Alabama, where they're inundated by toxic waste from a coal ash landfill and also untreated waste from spray fields. But yet they're again rising up, even though it's one of these deeply impoverished communities, and they're fighting back against kind of these big companies who own these landfills. And then we also are always inspired by Black Lives Matter, who together with the families of Mike Brown, Eric Garner, Oscar Grant, Trayvon Martin, Philando Castile, Sandra Bland, and so many others who are on the front lines of the struggle for police reform. And then finally, we have the legacy of Charity Hicks, who is an amazing food justice activist and a phenomenal person who was with the Eastern Michigan Environmental Action Council. She passed on tragically by being struck by a car, actually, when she was visiting the Left Forum a few years ago. But her legacy has really brought food justice to so many communities and local food movements that are taking away from the monopolies that are damaging our food systems. So through the strength and leadership of these folks and so many more, I believe that we will win. So as we move forward from this convening to integrate what we've learned and the new partnerships we've forged or the old relationships that we've strengthened, I'm looking forward to talking about the ways that we start to activate some of these and start to bring to scale some of the work that these luminaries have done for us. And we know that we have to build an alternative economy, even in the absence of political will. We have to impose a people's will, and we know that we don't have the political will. So specifically, we have to end the intertwined economic and political system that is predicated on the notion that there must be winners and losers, which results in the commoditization and exploitation of people, of labor, and of our natural resources. We have to reclaim our democracy and seize our voting rights. We have to get corporate money out of politics and out of our courts. We have to obliterate the concept of corporate personhood, and we have to have universal implementation of a living wage, and we have to stop the proliferation of militarization across the globe and in our communities. We have to deconstruct the prison industrial complex, and we have to deconstruct the food industrial complex, and the energy industrial complex, and the nonprofit industrial complex. We have to stop the privatization of natural resources that provide basic human needs like water. We have to denounce false solutions for our energy needs, from market-based mechanisms to fracking, nuclear, and clean coal. We have to advance energy democracy so that we stop polluting our communities through extraction, exporting pollution to other countries. And we also have to start generating our own energy at the community level, as our sister said. In deconstructing the food industrial complex, we have to take control away from big ag and grow our own food. We must end. Thank you. We must end our dig, burn, dump way of dealing with waste and move to zero waste. We have to have a transportation system that's accessible for all and reduces the number of cars on the road. We have to preserve our communities and eliminate gentrification and displacement. We must uphold all rights of indigenous people to sovereignty. And getting there, we really have to do what we're doing today, what we're doing tomorrow, what we're doing the next day, which is linking arms across the movement silos, across race, across class, across gender identities, across borders, across organizations, and push back against the machines of oppression. We also have to work through the divisions and the tensions within our movement and base our ways of working together on the Jemez principles of building power, being inclusive, emphasizing bottom-up organizing, letting people speak for themselves, working together in solidarity and mutuality, building just relationships among ourselves, and having a commitment to self-transformation as well. So together we can, together we must, and I look forward to working with you.